listening to The Nasty Table,
the premier source for tabletop role-playing actual play. Now come on in, relax, and pull up a seat to The Nasty Table.
This season at The Nasty Table, four fledgling adventurers chart a course through a desert land.
I'm Kristalos, but you may call me Kree. To my surprise, the above grounders have accepted me.
Hello, my name's Rook.
You guys always put yourselves in bad situations, I've learned.
My name is Hunter.
A great flame crawling its way to you.
I crawl to the flame.
Leviticus Cain, you sound like you're trying to save her. What'd you do in the end? Yeah, thanks, good buddy. I can take all their souls.
A realm filled with intrigue.
I don't know if you're good people or bad people, and I don't care. Hopefully, you might accidentally do some good.
Bomb maker, it's a fine craft.
Commerce.
What's your bag? What do you do?
Adventurer's guild. Honorable to some.
Money for others.
Magic.
Spread it. Astral wings. Its body is comprised of interconnected constellations, and they twinkle.
And danger.
Any other details that we might need to know before we put our lives in danger?
You can't buy him from this Esmer fella, you know?
Oh, no. No, oh, no. Esmer is gonna eat him.
I suppose I really don't care what you do with my body.
The Nasty Table presents Shadow of the Seven.
Well, welcome to The Nasty Table Season 2.
Thank you.
Shadow of the Seven. And this is the truth. When we started this podcast, however long ago, we did it with the intention of doing D&D after a brief mini campaign. Season 1, or LFVCU, where we played Delta Green, that ran for a full 80 full-length episodes. But now we're here. My name is Joe, and I have been running tabletop role-playing games for almost 11 years. I did the math on that when I wrote this little cute little script, and that's really fucking surprising to me. 11 years seems like a lot of time, but honestly, with the last 2 years, now I'm kind of at a good mix of running Dungeons & Dragons and Delta Green, like, concurrently, but I love tabletop role-playing games, probably more than anything else in the world, so I am very lucky to share the table with people who like them too. This podcast is very laid back. It's, you know, very relaxed. We want you to feel like a fly on the wall at our home game. But with that being said, it's never scripted. It's never practiced. We get rules wrong sometimes, and sometimes we change the rules. Anyone coming from season one gets the gist. For those of you who haven't listened to LFVCU and this is your first encounter with us, firstly, I would like to welcome you. Crack open a cold one. Go ahead and pull up a chair. But, like I mentioned, sometimes we change rules. And we're not always perfect. And sometimes we get rules wrong. But I don't really care. I am joined by the same group as LFVCU. But for those of you who have not met them yet, I would like to give them a chance to introduce themselves. Just go ahead. Give me your name. Tell me something about tabletop. Whatever you want to do.
I am Nick. I've been playing in Joe's games for as long as I could remember now, really. I played in LFVCU, our last campaign. I was Jerry Flores in that one. I'm ready to get creepy in this one. You know what I'm saying?
We've all been looking forward to Dungeons & Dragons a lot.
Big time. Haven't played it in a while.
I'm Mike. Played Caleb O'Connor in LFVCU. Been playing with Joe for 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
Only games ran by Joe in my tabletop career.
You don't know how good you have it.
Yeah, right. And like everybody else, I think it's been, what, 2-3 years now since we've seriously played D&D?
Yes. It has been a long time coming.
Really excited to get back into it.
Happy it's here. I really am.
I'm Alex, long time player as well, with Joe, and DM'd as well in the past. I was Sergeant Roy during our last campaign, our Delta Green campaign, and I'm hype as fuck for this campaign. Let's go. D&D.
Let's get rowdy. My name is Chup. I am Raymond James Hoyt, Leo Morrison from the LFVCU campaign. I've been playing tabletop games for a long time, primarily D&D, but a lot of like combat-based tabletop, just board games as well. Hyped to get back into D&D finally, though.
I promised you guys that we would get here, and I'm glad that you guys hung on eventually, and we can finally get here. I love D&D. I used to say that I didn't like D&D, but in the preparation for this campaign and the many months it's taken me to write all this stuff, I have refound my love for it for sure. One thing I do want to talk about, like I mentioned, about rule changes, I do not hesitate to change rules that I do not like. I have no respect for Wizards of the Coast. With that being said, one of their alternate rules that we are starting with is gritty realism rest rules. Long rests will take a week in-game, and short rests will take a day. My table does not like this change. This change is happening regardless. I have told my table that we will monitor it up to level 3 or maybe level 5. But from the start, at least level 1 through 3, that's going to be the rule. We're also using crit cards, which I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm still kind of on the fence about them, to be completely honest with you. Instead of doing, you know, double damage or double dice whenever we pull a natural 20 for an attack roll, we have these special cards that do different things based on whether it is slashing, piercing, bludgeoning, or magic damage. They range in power level, and some of them are useless, and some of them are very strong. So we're going to use them, and if we don't like them, we will stop using them. But for now, I think that we played a couple one-shots with them, and we'll use them for now. Speaking of changes to content and just content in general, the last thing that I want to talk about is the campaign itself. Entirely homebrewed. It is entirely made up by me, from the setting to the story. And then also, on the topic of content, this is your first and only content warning. There will be depictions of violence and gore. Nothing as bad as LFVCU, but I have a feeling we might get a little close. Listener discretion is advised. Without further ado, let's get started. Let's fucking get this show on the road. So, we begin our story on the continent of Ticinia, a land of dry, interconnected deserts, dunes of sand and spires of rock with hues ranging from blinding gold to crimson red. Here exists the Stray Oasis and Sandstone Cave. Along with feats of engineering and humanoid resilience, booming cities of commerce and trade exist all throughout, connected by caravan routes and well-built roads of solid chalk. To the far south, the Obyaneth Bog, a vast swampland of scattered waterlogged groves, bayous, and twisting waterways. Often shrouded in a dense fog, its very waters are said to house an ancient and dormant magic. Between the two regions of Ticinia are the Sandvale Peaks, a colossal mountain range with violent sandstorms that rage to a deadly level each century for an unknown period of time. We find ourselves 20 years into this increased sandstorm activity. The land of Ticinia is ruled by the Al-Saba, a court of 7 royal families. Each has their own designated territory and length of reach over the region, and each exert their power and influence very differently. The 4 of you, fledgling adventurers, find yourselves in the desert city of Kincaidine, the royal seat of power for the Sarninia family, a pious and strong royal family who are considered to have the largest standing army among the Al-Saba. Kincaidine is Ticinia's only port city, and is largely regarded as its unofficial capital. The city is home to a wide array of different citizens and travelers, yourselves included. A widely respected religious belief centered among a figure of worship known as the Many-Handed Mother dictates that only 7 docks may exist in Ticinia and may only exist in this city. Although many docks for travel exist across Ticinia, the Sarninia family upholds this belief in part, actively ensuring that no additional docks for commerce are constructed. As a result, ships and cargo vessels often find themselves waiting for weeks or even months to secure a spot to unload or embark. Humans make up about 80% of the population of Ticinia, but races like halfling, dwarves, tieflings, orcs, dragonborn, warforged, turtles, and tabaxi call it home. In addition to the classic fantasy races, there also exists a handful of more exotic races. The tiny and resourceful mouse folk, the solitary arachne, or spider folk, the nomadic and reclusive desert goliaths, a regal subspecies of Aarakocra, known as Quetzalborn, and the nature-bound cactus folk known as Maiwai. Elves also exist in Ticinia, but are few and far between. Elusive and rare to cross paths with, elves have a lifespan of 3,000 years. We start on the 15th day of the fourth month of the 966th year of the Third Era. A packed guild hall with several scattered dining tables and chairs. Travelers of all walks swap stories with blades on their hips. Frantic barmaid pours ale as fast as she can. The hall, with large yellow stained glass windows, refracts the natural light of the high sun to illuminate the scene. An elderly half-orc tries desperately to sweep up all of the tracked-in sand to no avail. A minotaur in full plate armor sits at a table sharpening a longsword. Quickly, he makes room for his party, celebrating a successful mission. Cashier stacks coins for payment, exchanging them for a blood-soaked bag. A stout dwarf with a beard that reaches to his knees pins a piece of parchment to a massive board filled with inquiries, bounties, and requests of all kinds. Amidst the bustle, you can hear a variety of expression. Cheersing mugs for a job well done. Solemn sobbing for a lost comrade. Tall tales, rumor swaps, and the clinking of coin. This is the Adventurers Guild of Kincaidine, one of several hubs for the guild across Ticinia, and where the four of you find yourselves now. By various motivations and means, you've enlisted yourself, whether for the lucrative opportunities that the guild presents, for prestige and accolades to help the common man, or to travel the continent. You've passed a month's worth of rigorous examination, both mental and physical, and it's culminated to today. One final step to become a certified D-ranking member of the Adventurers Guild. Your final test, practice in the field. The four of you find yourselves away from the ruckus of this main hall, swept into a smaller wing of the building, one designed to handle the arduous paperwork and administrative processes that a guild of this size would encounter. Now, before entering a small waiting area filled with a dozen or so prospective recruits, you've each been given a small ticket. As fate, or perhaps the gods, have ordained, each of your tickets bear the number 4. Groups of randomized parties are called upon and escorted out of this waiting area to receive their assignment until, rather quickly, a dwarven man with a blonde beard reaching down to his knees enters, taps on a clipboard in his hand, and calls,
"Interim Adventurers Guild Party number 4. If you got 4, the number 4 on your ticket, please stand up."
Stand.
I stand.
Yep.
So, I want to know who's standing up and what they look like.
You guys see, I mean, I guess I would probably stand out, you know. So, you guys see a 7-foot tall Maiwai cactoid man. And he doesn't have a shirt. He's not wearing a shirt or anything like that. Just basically like leather shorts, almost like jorts. He just has black holes for eyes, hole for a mouth, and shorter legs, but they're stubby, with just a giant torso, and like his head is unproportionately small to his body. He's got a really tiny head, and yeah, I stand up.
I want to know, what is it a male?
Yeah.
What's he thinking about? What's going through his mind?
It's been a long and exhausting day of practicing druidry and listening to the music in the wind. Another day drifts away as the large, boxy cactoid sits in the steamy sand slightly outside of town, picking up handfuls and letting it slip through his fingertips. He ponders the future as he watches the stars. It was only a day earlier that the community markets and the place where the cactus flowers bloom were raided by a group of traveling bandits. They stole food, livestock, and any valuables they could get their dirty hands on. Some Maiwans were beaten just for the laugh, and some have went missing since the raid. Crimes in the place where the cactus flower blooms seems to be happening more often as time goes by. The cactus man sits there in the sand with his head down as another approaches from behind. Rook, why are the outsiders always so mean to us? We didn't do no harm, the young cactoid says. Rook turns around and says,
we have a better future, I promise.
Rook and the young Maiwain walk back into town and go their separate ways. That would be the last conversation the young cactoid would have with Rook. The next day, hours went by before Maiwain's noticed Rook being nowhere to be found. Only a note was found in his hut that reads, as of today, I will be starting my journey to bring the love and respect we deserve to this community. I am traveling southeast on a mission to show the world that Maiwains are stronger and smarter than the world thinks. Whoever finds this, please spread the news for me. I want every Maiwain in this place, in the place where the cactus flower blooms, to read this. I really hope you understand this decision. I love this family, and I will hope every day that I get to come back soon. But for now, it is farewell. Please stay safe while I'm gone. Love, the steamy sand beneath my toes. A.K.A. Rook.
Wow.
That's my
That's beautiful.
Wow,
That's
dude.
Great.
Alrighty.
Fuck.
So got me feeling something already.
Who's,
I know, right?
Who stands up alongside him?
Alongside Rook, a man stands. He untucks a bit a frilled white shirt from his pants, and he thinks back to a time when he wasn't wearing this, when he was in much stuffier clothing, and he thinks back to a time in the old Kaizu, a titan-sized hermit crab shell that houses its own casino on the inside. We open on a dimly lit room. A long, ovular card table sits in the middle. Four chairs, now empty, on the long side pushed in. Two on the opposite end, both filled. One sits this man in all black. Cowboy hat covers his face as he looks down at the table. The other side, this hulking half-orc dressed in a suit with four or five lackeys sitting behind him. On the other long side of the table sits this box, this 6x6 black box that hangs off the edge of the table. And behind that stands a man in a suit, a uniform, with a name tag that reads Gary, Vice President of Operations. This box starts to whirl and make this mechanical noise to it. Vroom, 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 vroom. Before four cards exit the box, two to each player. The cowboy picks up the corner, puts it down. The half-orc picks up his cards and lets out a chuckle. His lackeys behind him follow. He pushes into the center. 5,000. The cowboy on the other end looks, nods, and puts in his 5,000. The box whirls again. Drops three cards, face up, center of the table. The orc laughs, looks at his stack, pushes in 5,000 more. The cowboy obliges. Next card comes out. The orc starts to get annoyed with the tempo of the cowboys matching his bet. Looks at the rest of his chips angrily and pushes them towards the center. The cowboy matches. The last card to be dealt. The box starts to whirl, the vroom, 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 and then a click echoes through the room as the silence grows. No card. Gary turns to a dimly lit corner of the room and coughs in the direction. No answer. And then Gary coughs again and turns to see that one of the lackeys is broken off from the half-orc. And he's talking to this man, this human, blonde hair that's slicked back, a mustache curled slightly at both ends, a well-trimmed soul patch hangs off his chin. And he runs his index finger and his pinky through the scalp of this balding half-orc lackey. And he has in his other hand this jar of what can only be some kind of white paste. And he as the silence grows, you hear the man say to this lackey, "Ooh, I tell you, just two easy, simple sessions, and we'll have you looking fine as a fiddle. I tell you, you just need this cream right here." Gary turns. "Levi!" Breaking the tension as Leviticus Kane ends his conversation and turns, seeing that the room has all eyes on him. He quickly scurries over to the table. This black box slides underneath with a screwdriver. "Sorry, fellas. I'm real sorry. Sometimes it's just a little finicky. You just need a..." Three twists to the screwdriver and bangs on it, and the box starts to whirl again. Fifth card comes out. The cowboy on the other end lays down his cards, a full house. And the half-orc slams his fist against the table. "It's fucking bullshit. You fixed it. You fixed it." Gary starts to take the gold and shift it over towards the cowboy, but the half-orc grabs his hand to stop him. "Oh, shit, it's bullshit." Levi, getting up from the underside of the table, looks at both sets of cards. "Now, big fella, what are you talking about? You was bluffing the whole damn time. That fifth card ain't mean nothing." The half-orc turns his attention to Levi and grips his collar tightly before dropping him to the ground, and all three lackeys behind the half-orc pull out pistols and point them in the direction. Quickly, Gary gets in the way. Now, it doesn't need to get to this. It doesn't need to. The half-orc slams his fist against the table once more.
"It's just fucking bullshit what you got running here. I'm gonna tell everybody about this. You know how much money's walking out of here?"
And he leaves with his crew followed behind him. Gary turns to Levi laying on the ground. "That's it, man. You're done here. I can't have this anymore. You spend half the time dicking around with the clientele, trying to sell them shit. You do good work, but I can't have it here anymore. You're done. We cut to the outside of the casino, and you see over Levi's shoulder, he has two pieces of parchment in his hand. One in his left hand, two-thirds of the top filled with these math equations, scientific symbols, and at the bottom reads a note that says, "Check the math for yourself. It's not enough. I need you to send more." In his other hand has a note, a printed flyer, "Adventurers Guild," and he walks off.
Damn, dude. You crushed it.
You're really doing the accent, huh?
I think I'm going to go with the whole thing.
Let's go.
You know you can't turn back now. Now it's set in stone.
I want to go thick with it.
Oh, God, that's awesome.
That is fucking awesome.
All right, who else stands up?
I stand up. So you see, I stand up, but you can't actually see me stand up yet. Not until I stand up on the chair that I was just sitting on. And you just see, peeking just above the crowd, this 2-foot-tall, black-scaled, black and kind of purple cloak-wearing kobold. My scales aren't, like, matte black. They're, like, I guess that's, what is that, like a chromatic kind of black, like a shinyish black. And at the right angle, you see just, like, a hint of, like, purple. Yeah, and my...
What kind of gear is he wearing?
So he's got a black cloak on. He's got his hood off. And the black cloak is, like, buttoned up at the top, but underneath you can see this leather armor. It's, like, dark, like, grayish leather armor.
Gotcha. And what's going through his head?
Standing in place as he remembers earlier when he painfully tried to soak up the sun, as the above grounders call it. After about a minute standing amongst the crowd, unaware of how foot traffic works in this crowded tavern in the crowded street outside, he throws his hood up, sheltered by the shade, as he begins to walk forward.
"Months have passed, and I am still no closer to the truth than I was when I left the caves. I've gotten desperate, so desperate that I've joined the Adventurers Guild. To my surprise, the above grounders have accepted me, despite what I look like, despite what I am. Cidro, I pray to you that their acceptance is a blessing, and you are not cursing me like you did my family. I pray that you guide me to the truth that I've been looking for since that day. Where is Revos? What happened to the elders? Am I the only Hexblade left? I pray that these answers lie within the Adventurer's Guild, or else I am wasting more time than I already have above ground.
That's all I got.
Dude,
that's
that
all
went
you
hard.
Got.
It's
that's
no
all
that
was
got.
Awesome.
That
accent was insane.
That accent is
like
so
that
good.
Like the Key and Peele skit where it's like the pre-fight conference, and the one guy is like, "Jesus Christ will allow me to." Dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. He's like, is he channeling
am,
the power
I am
of
the
God?
Will, I am the will of God. Jesus will allow me to crush his soul.
Okay. So what's this kobold's name?
This little 2 foot tall kobold's name is Kristalos, but above grounders call him Kree for short.
Is it with a K?
K-R-E-E.
That spells Kree. Creditreport.com, baby. All right, who is the final member to stand up?
Well, fittingly last, a cat-like figure does not stand at first, but gets on all fours to make his way out of his seat a good ways down the aisle, close to the speaker, until he finally raises into a bipedal form. A tall, what did I say? Oh, I didn't put it on here. 6'8", tall, lean but very muscular, sleek, iridescent black coat, tabaxi, taking on the features of a panther. He's wearing nothing but a thick, worn-in loincloth and waist wrap. He's, you know, paws out. Doesn't have really any jewelry on, nothing special. He looks very bare, and he seems eager, ready to go. And in his mind, well, he seems like he is totally somewhere else, and he is. So deep in a wooded crevasse within the Sandvale Peaks, two travelers, both monks, an aged half-elf, but in prime shape, and a sleek, lean black tabaxi. It's a rare, calm night in the peaks, considering the storm raging. The moon is lighting up the area. It's peaceful. The two begin to meditate for the night. The tabaxi's sitting like a cat, and the half-elf sitting crossed with his hands on the ground. The tabaxi says,
"Okay, Lorien. Are you ready? Plant your body firmly on the ground. Let the energy flow out of you, and then flow back. And again. And again. Everything is living all around us. Everything has what we're looking for right now."
All around the panther, it's growing and then dying. It's livening up like a phoenix from the ashes and then burning away rapidly and continuously. The wind starting to whirl around. You know, squirrels, birds are flying away. It's getting hot in the area. It's getting further and further, and the tabaxi says, "Yes." It gets worse and worse. And he says real loud, "These woods, this looks just like home, Lorien." And upon saying that, Lorien, he kind of shifts to like a kneeling, like almost like he needs the stability in that way. He can't sit on his butt anymore. And he audibly gasps. And he kind of freezes, and he really is locking up. Like, he can't move at all, but his jaw is still wide open. He's just staring at the ground. The tabaxi shouts, "It's like you're on fire with the feeling of everything around you. It's so heavy."
everything's shaking and rumbling. There's debris falling from the top of the crevasse, and there's rocks headed right towards them. And in an instant, the tabaxi is, there's rocks coming right towards them. They're right in his face, right about to crush Lorien. And the tabaxi uses Shadow Step. The untrained, knowing nothing, no key monk, uses Shadow Step to grab Lorien and himself and teleport them out of the debris. Right in time it falls, they make it to the side of the woods, and then snap, just like that. They're right where they are. They were standing, just meditating. The crevasse is opened up. There's debris all over, but not where they're where they were meditating. There's still debris and, you know, all the remnants of the chaos that had just happened, but Lorien and this tabaxi are totally fine. And they're left speechless. Until Lorien goes, "That was unbelievable. We were all the same." And the tabaxi smirks and says, "That other creature you told me about. However he learned that, he was wrong. He was not the truth. I am the truth. I am Honto."
We have Rook, the Maiwai, Levi, the human, Kree, the kobold, and Honto, the tabaxi. These are our adventurers. Now, the four of you rise, stand up. The dwarf who's called upon you motions for you to get close and follow him out of a door behind him. Do you guys follow?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
This door opens, revealing a longer hallway. The dwarf steps out and begins to heave his way down this hallway. He's not heavy set, but it looks like he's walking, probably with a limp. This hallway ends at a door that's inscribed Administration, and he kicks it open with one foot, steps inside, reveals a small, stuffy office with a desk, parchment strewn about, and a scuffed and rusted set of armor, based on the proportions, it is likely his, stands in the corner on a rack. He clobbers behind his desk, thumbs through some papers, motions for you four to step in, puts on a pair of folded eyeglasses, licks his lips, reaches out, straightens a shiny nameplate that he has on the desk that reads, "Brewster Bubblegut." He looks up at the four of you. The four of you are alone in this room with him. As you're looking over each other, I want to remind you guys that you have spent a little over a month in the Adventurers Guild trying to get certification, trying to become a member. So you guys have heard about each other before through rumors, or maybe you've seen them or any information like that. Now, before we started the session, I asked for everyone to give me three rumors. I wanted a truth, a lie, and a half-truth. I have distributed them randomly for you. You will get one rumor that you've heard about each other character, but I want to remind you that these are completely random. You might get three lies, you might get three truths, you know, might be mixed up. This is for the tabaxi. This is for the human. And this is for the Maiwai. And Alex, who's playing remote, is about to get texted something. So take the time to review those rumors. The dwarf speaks up.
"Right, Interim Adventurers Guild Party Number 4. One of the last steps on your road to certification."
And he's stamping a piece of parchment as he's talking.
"I'm gonna apologize in advance. We're a little light on work at the moment."
And he stamps another paper.
"The other groups have been assigned jobs that are much more fitting of their skills. Or, their lack of skills."
He puts the paper down, takes off his glasses.
"So, from what I've read in your reports,
You're all fairly new to the area, so I'm going to assume that you haven't heard of Aluhana.
And he just kind of like scans and looks over the four of you, trying to read your faces.
She was a brass dragon, made her roost in a mountain cave to the west. Friendly as dragons come. Watched over Kincaidine, stole some sheep every once in a while, but otherwise not problematic. Last year we heard rumors that she had laid a clutch of eggs, and that had proven to be the case when she was spotted flying away from her roost with a handful of little brass buggers. She's migrated to the northwest, to Maefstone, as per a report from the dwarves there. And it seems like she's not coming back, because that was 3 months ago. So, job is straight from the crown. The Royal Sun Ninian family. They want us, the Adventurers Guild, to collect the eggs. Or, I suppose, the egg shells that she left behind. The clutch was likely 7 or 8, but they only need 3. Cracked, dust, it doesn't matter. They just want the eggshells, no matter what form they're in. This cave that she nested in, it was called Talverna. It's a little over 2 days' journey west of here. Now, our monthly scouting report, patrols, they go past that mouth of that cave, and, well, they haven't reported any signs of disturbance. We have it on good information that the cave is well lit in the daytime. There's the holes in the top that let the sunlight in. What else do you need to know? Fuck. The mouth of the cave. There's a little body of water there. That's poisonous. Sulfur, acid, gases, something. Don't touch that. But we need you to go in, get the eggshells, and bring them back. Once it's all wrapped up, you'll be given your symbol of membership, your little card for, being in the Adventurers Guild and whatnot. But we got 2 weeks to get it done. Once you're done, your members. He just kind of looks over to four of you.
What's the dragon's name? Aluhana?
Aluhana.
Aluhana.
Very well. We'll be back. Let's go. Come on.
Rook starts walking.
I start heading out. Mm-hmm. Heading out? Mm-hmm. As you guys are Followed about to mind. Leave, he actually speaks up.
Oh, wait. Come here. I was supposed to give you pointers, tips for your first time in a field. Shit. 20% of adventurers die from poisoning, so be careful. Cactus Joe was last spotted in the salt flats, so just be careful if you go near there. But everything Who's else should that? Be fine. This is a good one.
What?
Cactus Joe.
Who is Cactus Joe?
Okay. He's a dangerous man. Highest bounty target in the area. Bandit, raider. Cannibal, I think. Well, you shouldn't be going near the salt flats for this at all, so.
And might I ask a price point on this, this man's head? I just want to assess the danger level.
Let me show you, actually. And he reaches down, and you see him pull out a stack, probably like about 4 or 5 inches thick, of different. They look like bounty listings, but there's no picture on there. It just says Cactus Joe at the top, and it's got a number at the bottom of it. And the one on the top says 100 gold, and he pushes that one off. And the one under it says 250, and he pushes that off. 500. Let's see, up to 1275.
Thank you, sir. Dangerous. Stay away.
Yeah, seriously, though. We'll get your cards inscribed while you're gone, and just bring the eggshells, and you're part of the team.
Wonderful. Let's go, boys.
Okay. Start walking out.
Yeah, I head out. Exiting out of this office back into the main hall of the Adventurers Guild. Like I mentioned, it's rowdy. People are talking, like I said, swapping stories, talking about rumors. There's people who you see hauling in carcasses of various beasts, slamming them on the counter. What do you guys do?
Does anybody have a map?
I don't have a map.
Wonderful idea, Kree. We should get a map, yes.
Oh, a map.
I want to go up to... There's, like, the counter, I guess.
Yeah, so the main counter there is just basically, like, an exchange. There's, like, a little tiny grate, and there's a woman on the other side of it who's, like, counting out coins to the person who's in front of you in line, and she passes it off, and she looks up.
Miss.
Hello.
Is there anywhere me and my friends can get a map?
Map, yes. We just got a couple in, but we are charging 40 gold for them, unfortunately.
40 gold?
Yes.
That is criminal, don't you think?
They are handmade and hard to replicate. The scale is perfect.
Could you draw a rough one for me, maybe?
You can take a look at it for a little bit if you want.
I suppose that would work.
Will you take the shovel?
She, like, looks at it and just kind of, like, looks back at the tabaxi.
I suppose that would work, yes.
Sure.
Iron pot.
I'll get that for you. Real quick, 1 second.
Thank you.
She stands up and walks away.
Not interested, I guess.
Rook standing with an iron pot in his hand.
I did what I could.
I appreciate you.
Yes. It's okay, Failure. Gave it a try. And pat him on the back.
That hurts you, I think.
Does it?
Yeah,
it
pricks you. You pat him on the back? Yeah, prickly back.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No. I ain't no reason to be sorry. Yeah, you're all right, son.
You gotta watch the pricks.
Yeah, all right.
She comes back with a very large map. It kind of, like, spreads it out. So this is Kincaidine and the surrounding area for you. Mm-hmm. If you just want to...
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I kind of give her a look, you know.
She kind of, like, gives a sideways smile.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind, could you just kind of step over there so I can take the next person in line?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so we are...
Did she give this to us rolled up, or was it just like a flat map?
Unrolled flat map.
Okay.
But it's fairly large.
Okay.
We should go through Clay Bend, around the Ember Works, and then to the cave. No?
Sounds good to me.
What is it?
I imagine it's like very sunny outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the sun is high and beating.
What is it, human?
You kind of look out the window and see it.
I can tell you disagree.
So one of my feats is keen mind.
Sure.
Would I be able to remember a map?
Read keen mind to me. Let's do it. Let's get into the rules.
You can accurately recall anything you have seen or heard within the past month.
Yes, you would be able to use your photographic memory to memorize this map.
Your temporary photographic
memory. Yes, for Flew 1 month. Soon. So, you can go ahead and keep that there. Wow.
Fuck your 40 gold. You didn't think it would happen this quick?
I did not. I didn't even know you took Keen Mind.
Yeah, sorry. Just so you know. I did Keen Mind.
Well, now I know.
Keen Mind and Sharpshooter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, we'll be fine. I've got it down.
Wow, Levi, you can really memorize that entire thing.
Yeah.
Wow. That is incredible.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Hands the map back to the,
I go run. I go
behind the counter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Woman kind of grabs it and rolls it back up. Good luck out there.
Oh, well, we do get it back, I guess.
Mechanically, we get it back.
Roll a d20, Mike Finn. I'm trying to see whether or not I should give you a point of inspiration.
19.
Yeah, you can take your point of inspiration.
Dude, you have two now,
yes.
Right? Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah. Jesus. Tell the listening audience why you're starting with 1 point of inspiration, please.
Oh, we did a, to get back into the mechanics of battling in D&D, we did a four-person battle royale to see if everybody could get back into battle mechanics. And I hid in the corner for three quarters of it and then came out at the end with double the health of everybody else and won.
I'm glad you were honest about it.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So, still within the halls of the Adventurers Guild, what are you guys doing?
Well, are we ready to go? Do we need supplies? Are we okay? I am okay.
I mean, it's just an eggshell.
Is there going to be food? There things we can hunt along the way?
There's berries.
Have you been that way?
No, I've never been this far southeast in my life.
I see.
I suppose we could get rations before we head out of town, no?
Do we start with rations, DM?
What bag do you guys have?
I have an explorer's pack.
Explorer's pack have 10 days worth of rations in them.
Okay.
If you want extra, you know, you can definitely, that's something that you can do. Explorer's pack also has a, like a water skin in it, and I'm pretty sure the Dungeoneer's pack does as well.
It does, it's 10 days of rations.
So we all have 10 days of rations.
I would imagine so. If you guys all have either Dungeoneers or Explorers pack, yeah, you guys are starting with 10 days worth of rations.
Well, then I suppose we don't need to stop and get rations, no?
Double check this. Are we counting food?
I would like to just at least, I'm not going to track it.
Just like say we have
but
enough
if you
food.
Guys have enough food, I'm not going to split hairs over it.
Let's go. Let's fucking do this. I follow behind Rook because he probably gives the most shade.
He does, actually, adequately enough, especially if you match his stride in order to get on the good side of him. You're able to catch some reprieve from the sunlight. The second you guys leave the guild halls, you're in a much less populated part of Kincaidin. Now, this map that Levi has memorized is the city. This isn't the surrounding areas. Everything that falls in here is part of Kincaidin. Specifically, this is on the mention of what you see listed as Claybend, the Drift, Saltside. Those are a collection of houses. Other important key, you know, points of interest are also on that map as well. But as you come out, the streets are still packed, even though this is a less populated part of the city. Streets and alleys. You can even see off in the distance to your guys' right, the Royal Halls of Kincaidin. It's called Baitinka, which is just this massive castle in the center of city. But everywhere that you've been in this city, you can pretty much see this castle from some part. It's very flat. The city itself is actually built on a fairly large, or I should say fairly tall plateau. To the far north, the salt flats exist, which are mainly used for mining salt. People who live in the drift typically work in those fields, collecting salt to sell. So my question to you guys is, you were told that this would be a 2 days journey to this cave. What route do you guys want to take? Is there any stops that you guys want to make? Is there anything that's important to you guys?
I think we should just go right there. I mean, we are ready, right? I want to get this certification process over with, so we can be in the guild and receive the perks of being in the guild now.
Yeah, it's only eggshells.
Yeah, I ain't got no problem. Nowhere to be.
Neither do I. Let's get those eggs.
So if you guys want, we can go at an expedited pace. You guys can move quicker. You would take penalties to your passive perception. But you would get there in about a day and a half instead. But it's up to you guys whether you want to do that or take the full 2 days and change to get there at a regular walking pace.
Nah, let's go quicker.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, making your way out of the Adventurers Guild, through the streets, you pass houses that are clumped very closely together, made out of mud brick, these dried terracotta roofs, through the section of town known as Clay Bend, which, much to its name, contain clay houses. Similarly to how I described, stuffed very, very close together. You can see as you're passing through the streets, beggars on the side of the road with cups in their hands, tattered cloths, huddled masses of people. You can see these houses in Clay Bend. They're so packed closely together, and they probably house maybe upwards of 10 families per, you know, building that exists here. You work your way through that. Probably around as night falls, you guys make it towards the outskirts of town. You hit the road that heads westward out of Kincaidine, and it's beautiful. This road itself, the sand that you're trekking through is hard and compact in this area, but this road is this stark white, and as the moon's starting to come out, it kind of illuminates this chalk road, and it's wide. It's probably about maybe 2 or 3 yards wide, extending out and curving. Crossing over that, it's not too hard to find a spot that looks like it would make a good camp, up against a large rock outcropping to cover your backs, defensible position, flat terrain, nothing nearby to hide behind. You guys want to make camp for the night?
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
What does that look like? In your adventurer's pack, or your explorer's pack, and your dungeoneer's pack, you guys have bed rolls. You guys have, you know, the amenities to make a fire, cook if you so choose, or whatever you want to do. But what do you guys look like making camp?
Cree finds like a rock that's slightly bigger than him, which I imagine is not that hard to find, and just pulls out like a very thin, like, bed sheet out of his pack and just tosses it on top of the rock and just pops a squat, and that's where he's going to be sleeping and chilling.
Honto, while everyone is finding where they're going to bed down, is going to crank up a bunch of push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups. He's going to plank for a little bit. Gonna get a good hard workout in, and then he's going to sit and meditate in a cat's seated position for like a solid 30 minutes. And then just go to bed. Chill.
Lie. Rook literally just lays on his back on the ground. Just
I don't know.
Looking up at the stars. Do you guys make a fire?
Feeling the soil.
Yeah.
The cold night is starting to take.
Yeah.
When the sun sets, the desert can get fairly cold.
I think
make a fire, why not?
Yeah. Works. Levi starts to get ready, puts his jacket maybe on a nearby branch, hangs off, and you see under his jacket there's these that hang off clips that are around both of his arms, these almost long fluorescent like light tubes, sort of, but they're filled with this like blue gaseous material that's flowing. Two of them are filled, two of them are empty, that are hanging off of them. And he pulls out this, it looks like a big chunk of rock salt, and a mortar and pestle, and starts to just break it up into this fine powder as he sits down against against a rock.
Time passes. You guys all bed down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No interruptions through your rest as you awake. Crack of dawn. Any conversations as you guys break camp and continue on?
See, in the morning when I wake up, I try and get a quick meditation in again. Break off from the group a little bit.
Gotcha. It's easy to focus out here. Nothing but the sea of sand before you. Especially when the sun crests up higher, you can see it make those mirages on the edges of the horizon, dancing and twinkling. Open your eyes, squint them, and stand up. You guys continue on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Breaking camp, you continue on at an increased speed, pushing through the sand. Now the sand's starting to get a little bit softer than it was in town. This isn't as compacted, obviously hasn't been traversed as often. And there's nothing, as far as the eyes can see, other than the crests of the dunes. But far in the distance, you do see extending out what looks like a large, thin mountain. Based off of Levi's memory, this is likely the cave that you are looking for, Tolverna. What do you guys do? I'd say it's probably about a mile in the distance. You guys have been walking for maybe 8 hours since waking up. Sun should be setting maybe in 4 or 5 hours.
As it kind of peaks our sight, I say,
finally some shade. Come on.
Pick it up a little bit quicker.
Picking it up, you can see, it's not hard to see the mouth of a cave entrance. What looks like a mouth at first, but you actually get closer and notice, probably I'd say 100, 175, 200 yards away, a hole. It looks like a sinkhole directly next to this large, spiring, thin mountain. Getting a little bit closer and maybe getting on a dune nearby to kind of look up and over, it looks like this sinkhole extends down pretty far. But you don't see any direct other entrance to this cave that you've been told about on this mountain.
Do we see water around it?
You do not.
Am I able to see, like, with dark vision with anything down there?
Do you step up to take a look at the sinkhole?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of get to the edge and you look down and you can see it extends down maybe 50 or so feet. And at the bottom is a pool of water. And this pool of water looks like it flows into an opening that leads into the mountain. But on either ends or either edges of this mouth look like rock platforms that you'd be able to walk in. What you notice as well, two rope ladders that extend down onto edges around this pool below, made out of rock. The rope ladders extend down all the way to the bottom.
Okay, but these, like, platforms that the ladders lead to, they are not in the water.
They are not in the water, they're the edges of it. Imagine if it was an in-ground swimming pool and this was like the concrete around it. The water, you can see it looks this beautiful light blue color and it's kind of bubbling quietly.
I think this is what Mr. Brewster was warning us about.
We go down, we use the ladders, but I don't think we touch that water. I think it's poison.
I would agree with you, Cree.
Okay.
Let's go.
Climbing down the ladder?
Yeah.
There's two. Are you guys making use of both of them, or going down one at a time, or what's the logistics here?
Does it all connect at the bottom?
Looks like it does.
Okay, I'll go down the other one.
Yeah.
Making your way down, climbing down, and you can see as the sand that you're passing down as you're descending down looks fairly loose at the top, looks a little bit more compact, and slowly turns into stone. Solid stone as you go down below, like a light colored cream stone, likely sandstone, as you make your way down to this edge of this pool of water. What you do notice too, and it's not hard to miss, as you guys make it all the way to the bottom, you see floating in the pool is what looks like bits and pieces of what could have been a third rope ladder in the pool of water there, just kind of floating near the middle. It's bubbling up, and you can smell this rotten egg smell kind of rising out from this water. Now, the edges of the pool seem like they wrap around and lead in through the mouth of a cave. If you look directly up that mouth, it's not hard to make out details. It appears as if there's holes in the top of this cavern that reach out through the mountain and bring in natural light, so it is well lit.
How far, like, from where we are in the outskirts, how far down is the water?
From where you are on the
outskirts? Like, how far is that, like, edge?
Oh, it's probably about 5 or 6 feet.
Oh, 5 or 6 feet down into the water.
Oh, you don't know. You don't know how deep
no,
it is.
No, 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 that's what I'm saying. From the edge of where we're at to the start of the water.
Like oh, that. Oh, that gap?
Yeah.
It's flat. It's directly flat.
Oh,
maybe, okay. Like, 2 or 3 inches.
Okay. Levi gets down on one knee, pulls out a pair of forceps and an empty beaker,
mm-hmm.
and a stopper, takes both ends of the beaker in the forceps, starts to dip it into the pool.
Yep.
Filling it.
Yep.
Halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Pulls it up.
Yep.
Shakes it off and puts the stopper on.
Okay.
And puts it in his bag.
Okay.
What are you going to do with that?
Drink it.
You never know when you're going to need some good poison.
You got other ones too?
Oh, yeah. Pulls out a deck of this roll. It's got the same size vial of different colors, pinks and reds and yellows. The blue looks nice there, completing the rainbow.
I don't like that.
Not all.
All of those poisons?
I heard they were souls.
No, no, no. These is souls. And he opens his jacket, revealing the fluorescent light tubes from last night.
Those are souls?
Yeah.
What'd they do?
Them?
Mm-hmm.
They died.
You did it?
Not all of them, not all of them. No, no, no.
Were they bad?
Oh.
No.
Wow.
Not them all.
Why, Levi, you are so interesting, Levi.
Now why? And I'll tell you here. If I like y'all, these can help everybody. Because I send these souls I got here, collect them, send them to get cleaned. You know, take out the gross parts. They come back to me cleaned, and I can put them in all kinds of different items. Weapons, safety material. Everybody wins. But just if we run into some guys and happen to kill them, I just gotta take their souls. That's it.
I turn to the tabaxi and I say,
do you sleep with one eye open? Or is that just a stereotype?
Oh, he could never get me. He could never.
I'd never want to.
I don't think you would. But that is... It's interesting, yes. It is.
Yeah. He starts to... A little bit more self-conscious now. Puts the jacket back on his shoulder and puts up his bundle of poisons.
Rook, like, from, like, for the next, like, hour is, like, avoiding eye contact with Levi and, like, every, like, kind of doing, like, these, like...
Give him the side eyes.
Yeah. Like, dog, yeah. Like, when a dog's, like... Give him a side eye.
Do you guys continue on?
Yeah.
Walking around the edges of this pool of water towards the mouth of the cave. Like I mentioned, natural light pierces through the top from cracks that are, you know, up above. They don't look like they were formed on purpose. They look very natural in the way that they work, almost as if there's these channels that reach all the way through the top of this cave out to the mountain above, and light is just pouring in. The way ahead is very, very clear. It looks like a straight path that wraps directly to the left.
Keep on.
Continuing down this path, you make a left, and you can see what look like not a staircase, but rocks that have been stacked and perhaps chiseled, perhaps molded, to create a sort of staircase that looks like it extends upward, probably about another 50 or so feet up. Each step, and I use that in quotation marks, is probably about 3 or 4 feet high. For Kree, this is going to be a little difficult. But for everyone else, you kind of have to hoist yourself up on each of these steps. There's maybe about 12, 15 of them in total.
Extends is there up to anywhere...
looks like a platform above.
Is there anywhere on Rook that does not have points and needles?
Why me? Why not the Tabaxi?
Yes, my friend, get on me.
He's furry. I grab onto Hanto's wrist and I start climbing up, and I say,
"You looked a little bigger, a little stronger."
I fucking hop onto the Tabaxi's back.
Onto the Tabaxi's back. You guys making your way up here?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I need everyone except for Kree to roll in athletics for me.
First roll of the campaign. Non-nat 20.
Ooh, dirty 20.
11.
I got an 18.
18, 20, and 11. It's easy enough for you guys to make your way up here. It's not particularly strenuous. It's not particularly, you know, expending of any of your staminas as you make your way up. However, who would be leading? Who would be at the forefront here?
I can't say I would if I'm helping.
Great. Yeah, that's what I would think.
I feel like it's weird that I would be too. Is like,
especially if you're.
This is like the first time I've ever been in a cave, and I'm like, wow.
Keeping an eye on Levi too.
I see that he's still giving me the side eye.
I would have made you go first.
Levi gives him a smile, big eyes, and gives him a nod and walks first.
Gotcha. You heave up on the first, second, third. This fourth one, you can't actually see the actual platform there. So when you hoist yourself up, you see on this fourth step what look like a pile of cloth. And it's well lit in here, and it looks like it's covered in something dark. It's off to the backside, so you're able to kind of hoist yourself up and get a good look at it. You take a look?
Yeah, but kind of go off to the side, look down, see what everybody else is. See how they're moving.
Yeah, they're hoisting themselves up and getting up, and Rook probably gets up to the step behind you.
Put out a hand for him.
It's gonna hurt you.
All right.
And I don't want you to take my soul. And I jump up.
Getting up, and you can see this as well. It looks like a bundle of cloth. Now that you're actually getting a close look at it, it looks like it's orange. It looks like it's strips of cloth. And, very obviously covered in blood. It's probably about 4 or 5 of them. They're not bundled in any particular order. They're not shaped in any way. It just kind of looks like they've been thrown here.
Is it wet?
Touch it. Yeah, it does seem like it's wet.
It's wet.
And then at this point, I would probably say Hanto and Kree make their way up as well.
What's the rest of this area look like?
Well, it looks like you have to continue up a decent amount more.
Okay. Yeah, keep going.
Continuing up, pulling yourself on the 5th, 6th, 7th. This pathway kind of turns, and you got to kind of shimmy your way back a little bit. Make your way up 7th, 8th, 9th. And you can see probably 3 or 4 more steps that you have to pull yourself up over ahead. What looks like a landing. You make your way up, and you can see directly ahead another hallway that looks like it extends this time to the right.
Yeah.
This whole way up, there's been no blood stains.
No, you don't notice any kind of blood stains or anything as you continue up.
Wait for the rest of the group and then.
Everybody else makes their way up.
From this point on, I would like to proceed cautiously.
Okay.
It's a long hallway down, you said?
Yeah, and it extends to the right.
I'm going to take it slower from here on out, boys, eh?
Continue on?
Yeah, I'll take the front now, if we're all up.
Progressing with stealth?
Yes, that's what I meant when I said that.
I figured.
Cautiously.
Go ahead and roll stealth.
I didn't know what to say. It's been a little while.
Don't worry, I'm going to ask when I almost asked you guys for alertness, like, a second ago, so...
Ten.
You slink your way up to the edge of this hallway, and it turns right, and it looks like it directly turns into a large open-air chamber. You can smell the air outside kind of waft in. Large chamber. The walls are blackened, scorched, and cracked. It kind of creates like this ripple effect along the walls that almost look like glass in certain parts, and they're shiny too. Natural light pours in from cracks on the ceiling and on the edges of the walls here, and they kind of shoot these beams of sunlight in and ricochet around the room off of this almost like obsidian blackened stone around the edges.
Can I identify a path that the light does not, at least, touches? I guess I could say
it's very easy to notice that off to the back left corner there is what looks like an alcove that possibly extends to a room beyond, but there's no light that you can see visible in there. The other thing that you notice too is on the right of this chamber there is a rock outcropping, this huge rock outcropping that's pretty high off the ground. It looks like a perch. Into the back of this chamber there's this large natural opening, this window that you can see directly out, sand peaks in the distance. But most notably, in the center of this chamber, bushes that are dried, burnt plant material. This huge nest. You don't notice anything shiny in it, but a lot of the light does seem to actually hit this thing. It's probably about four and a half feet tall. So if you want to actually peek in, you'd have to get a little bit closer. But from now, it's probably about 30 or so feet from you. This chamber is very large.
We all see that?
At this point, if he clears you guys to come up, yeah.
I would say cautiously come up.
Yeah, follow.
Yeah. I think we should go in and stick to the shadows. No?
I see it, and Rook's like, whoa. Yeah. I like start moving.
Keep stealthy, boys.
So, stepping into the room, where are you trying to make your way? I mentioned that dark alcove, but that's on the opposite side of the room, so probably like 100 feet away from you. And to get there while sticking in the shadows is going to be hard. It almost seems intentional, the lighting in here. A lot of this room is very, very well lit from the natural light.
The only other thing besides the bushes in the middle was the balcony alcove overlook thing that you described.
Yeah, that perch off to the right perch. And the large natural window, like I mentioned.
All right, let's stay in the shadows. And we're going to try to get a slightly better viewpoint on the bushes in the middle. Just trying to stay in the shadows, though. Like, tell me where I can get first before I make a roll type of decision.
Gotcha. So you kind of edge your way up, eke your way a little bit closer. And it is, there's nothing else really in this room, nothing to like particularly hide behind. So if you do want to approach with stealth to get a good view in, at this point, you maybe see the top quarter of it from the angle that you're at. You'd have to get a little bit closer, and I would require a stealth roll if you are trying to move stealthily.
Yeah.
And is anyone else doing anything, or just kind of watching Honto do his thing?
Kree is fucking, like, jaw-dropped looking at this big-ass nest. And he, like, grabs on to fucking, like, Rook's wrist, and he's like,
my god. I have never seen one in person before.
And then I follow Honto, and I want to roll stealth, too.
Okay. What are you guys doing?
I do pretty much the same thing. I mean, Rook's also, like, in awe. He's like, what the fuck is that?
Levi?
Staying in the shadows, in the back where we came from.
Creeping back. Is that a callback to the Battle Royale. Go ahead and roll stealth for me. Everyone except for Levi, roll stealth.
Nine.
11.
14.
Creeping and crawling up, you guys make your way up as stealthily as you possibly can, which is very hard in this open space. I would say, very, very obviously, with the height disparity here, Honto and Rook are obviously going to get a look at this before Kree can actually make his way up, because you actually have to probably hoist yourself up over and look inside. Rook and Honto, what you guys see inside is very obviously a nest, but it is completely empty, save for what looks like a dead body. A human looking upwards with a large slash across its chest. It's wearing these orange robes. There's a sigil that's painted on it. Take a look at the sigil, just kind of looking over it rather quickly before you guys kind of react to anything else. The sigil itself looks like a vulture skull with its beak hooked downwards. It's flanked by two thick outstretched wings. But the wings are kind of like sketched with super sharp angles. They're not like actually feathered and very flowy. He has a satchel on his side, and like I mentioned, this deep slash across his chest. His eyes are closed.
I immediately want to look up and investigate the ceiling, roof, you know, holes into the cave.
And what are you looking for specifically?
Anything that's like people, like vantage points, kind of, you know?
What's like
now that we're in the middle here.
What's interesting is above these holes that are above you, they look less like direct holes and more as if they're like tunnels, like tubes that extend up. Some of them are probably about the width of a basketball, while some of them are about the width of like a washer machine. Various different sizes of these tunnels that kind of shoot out, almost as if they've kind of been burrowed in to let this light inside. Doesn't look like there would be any place to hide. And if there was something hiding in it, it would likely block the light, of which you don't notice any of these tunnels acting in that way. And this nest, if it's not clear, is probably about 20, 30 feet wide. It's almost like a indoor swimming pool.
Would I be able to...
Or an above-ground swimming pool, I should say.
Sort of make my way around the perimeter to where this I guess not the open air, but that platform is that's sitting above.
Yeah, that perch.
Yeah, trying to look for if there's any cracks in the facade of this place that or any handholds, ways to get up there.
Take a look. No, doesn't look like it.
It looks like it's from a different point that you enter, that you would get on this perch.
Perhaps, or you could make your way up there, but it would be scaling this the rocky outcropping. It doesn't look like there's any designed way to get up to that perch. And the perch itself is very large as well. Probably about, like I said, like 20, 30 feet high and probably about like 15, 20 feet large, long, you know. And it looks natural as well. It doesn't look like it's been carved or chiseled or anything like that. But as you do make your way there, you are closer to that back window that I mentioned than they are at the nest. So you can actually see, hooked into the bottom of this natural opening, what looks like a grappling hook.
Can I make my way closer to where this hook is?
Make your way closer. You look down to see rope connected to a grappling hook that extends all the way down this mountain. Probably, you would guess, maybe 70 or so feet. And there's a body at the bottom of it.
Can I make out anything on this body? Just colors?
It looks like it's wearing orange robes.
Okay.
It's face down and unmoving.
How deep is the body in the nest? Like, how deep is the nest?
About 4 feet.
Okay. No one's looting it right now, right?
You'd have to step in to actually get to it if you'd like.
I want to slowly step in.
Crawl in, and you're crunching on the bushes. Each footfall, yeah, small as you are, makes loud cracking noises as you get closer to the body. Now you're standing over it.
Before I even put my hands on him, I want to just fucking, like, soak it all in. Like, I just want to look up and look around and, I don't know, eat it up. I don't see anything else, right?
Not within this nest that you've noticed.
Okay. Start patting down the body, see if there's anything on him.
Yeah, so it looks like he has a satchel on his side. He doesn't have any kind of pockets or anything. You notice that he's wearing a necklace of some kind, but it's actually under the robes that he's wearing. So if you wanted to take a look at it, you'd have to either rip the robes or take it off or whatever. But he has a satchel on his side.
I'm going to pull the satchel, and I'm also going to rip the robe to try and get that thing on him.
And what are you guys doing during this?
I heard him. I feel like he made a lot of noise.
Oh, big time.
So I am on high alert, maybe even scram from where I was standing, try and get to the edge or wherever I think is close enough, but more stealthy than the position I was at.
Gotcha.
Kinda, and then look around.
Okay.
You know.
Gotcha. Rook?
I'm probably just still keeping watch.
Just keeping your
just
eyes
like up. Just looking over, yeah, just like watching him in the nest.
Cream. Taking a look through. First, you kind of pull this person's robes down, take out what he's wearing. It looks like it is a handmade necklace of various small bones. Looks like it's kind of layered, almost like it's like 3 pieces. The satchel, kind of pick it up, take a look inside. There's some dried and cured meats that you see in there, as well as this beautiful earth colored with like deep browns and grays eggshell. The bottom half of an eggshell. The inside is dried and flaky and white, but the outside, like I mentioned, almost like the surface of it has this natural shimmer to it. It's very, very pretty. It looks like it's crushed. You would guess, based on the size of what you can imagine, is half of this egg. A regular full-size egg would be about the size of a melon. Probably a cantaloupe.
Fuck. That's fucking big for Kree. I want to pull it out gently. And, like, I want to give it a knock and really, like, I don't want to test its endurance, but I want to see if I can feel its endurance.
As you pull it out, you can see that it's already kind of falling apart and flaking off. It does seem very fragile, and as if it's already been broken.
Yeah. I whisper,
I found one.
Try to pull it out, remembering that they don't really care the condition that it's in. From the bottom of the fucking nest.
Holding it up for probably the only person who would notice would be Rook, just kind of standing there with his hollow eyes and hollow mouth. The wind that's whistling in from outside just kind of making its way through him. I need Rook and Honto to roll perception for me. And Levi, is there anything that you're doing?
No, looking if this guy fell, if there's any like maybe like little, that's what I'm assuming at this point, like little peaks or little ledges where an egg shell could have been. From where we are in the mountain, like down.
Roll investigation.
Or see if any of it's on the ground near him.
Roll investigation.
18.
18 perception. Six perception.
Nine
investigation. You don't see any kind of ledges. It doesn't look like he was reaching for anything or anything like that. That doesn't seem like it would be probable. But you do notice, kind of maybe even taking a closer look down there and, you know, focusing your eyes. It looks like he has a satchel on similar to the body that was in the nest as well. I'm sorry, what was that for perception?
18.
18, you got 9?
6.
Honto, you hear this sludgy hissing noise coming from that darkened alcove. Just this real guttural, like...
This is the far room?
Yes, the one that was covered in darkness, as I mentioned.
Okay.
And these, like, wet footfalls.
Where is...
So he's directly across from you on the other side of the room.
So looking, how close is he
to this opening?
I'm on the other side of the opening?
Yeah, so you're on the other side. So probably Levi would be about 50 feet. You probably around 35 or so.
Oh, I'm closer to this opening.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Because you said you tried to get to like a more, like not hidden spot, but closer to the edges to kind of hide yourself a little bit. It is kind of getting louder.
I immediately want to start moving back towards the group slash where we came from. Like, as close as I can, you know, whatever that direction. And when I get far enough, say,
we have company, boys. We have company.
So I didn't hear the growling?
Probably when he says that, now you're kind of starting to hear it. This deep, guttural growling that also sounds like a hiss.
Okay.
And these heavy, kind of slapping, wet footfalls.
Yeah. I start to try and get safe. Back to where we came from.
Stepping back, Cree Levi.
Do I notice anybody make any movements or these
footfalls? Yeah. I would say you're wrapped up your investigation of the guy down there by the time that they mention this.
Okay, then following behind them, keeping perception. But yeah, getting much closer to the group.
Okay, Cree. You're still in the nest.
I'm putting the fucking broken egg in my pouch as best as I can and just fucking trying to crawl my way out of the
scuttering
of the
up
nest.
Making a lot of noise as it's crunching and cracking these dry branches. You're able to scuttle your way out, kind of hit the floor on your back, stand up and scurry off towards the rest of the group. You guys are a safer distance away, you feel, as you see out of that darkened alcove enter a large beast. Scaled with this thick, thick hide, spines going up its back, four-legged with a super long tail that extends out and almost makes like a whip crack noise as it steps in, but it looks injured. Out of its side, you see this light green liquid blood dripping out, and you can see two spears in its back as it's making labored steps further into the chamber. Everybody roll stealth.
Six. Again.
13. 20, not natural.
16.
The creature, making its footfalls in and leaving a trail of its own blood behind it, turns its head, locks eyes with Rook, and we will roll initiative when we pick up next session.
Fuck. Why me?
I'm going back. I'm going home.
What's the first thing we do in D&D is investigate a dead body?
Thank you for listening to this installment of Shadow of the Seven, a Nasty Table production.